I'm Julia Paskin. Join me as I talk with NPR's Sarah McCammon about her new book, The Ex-Evangelicals, Loving, Living, and Leaving the White Evangelical Church. That's April 25th at the Crawford. Tickets at las.com/events.
Great to have you with us this morning on Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Tomorrow, just want to let you know, Austin Cross will be hosting In My Stead. I have to take the day off tomorrow. Hope to be back with you on Friday. But Austin will be in tomorrow, and you'll be able, of course, to hear him this afternoon, 1 o'clock, hosting the first NPR feed of the day of All Things Considered here on KPCC. Well, we're going to update you on what's going on in the Twin Cities, as you just heard on NPR Hourly News. Major events taking place after another night of unrest. The defense making its second day of its case in the courtroom in the murder trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. And we then have word today that former Brooklyn Center police officer Kim Potter, who shot and killed Dante Wright after a traffic stop in an effort to take him into custody. She has now been charged with second-degree manslaughter, Potter claiming that she accidentally shot Dante Wright with her service weapon, but that she meant to use a taser device instead. Joining us with the very latest on what's happening in the Twin Cities area is Matt Sepik, who's a reporter with our sister organization, Minnesota Public Radio News. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. First, if you had a chance to hear any response to the filing of that second-degree manslaughter charge against the former Brooklyn Center officer.
Well, I did check social media just before getting on the line with you here, from the sounds of things, a lot of folks in the community, racial justice activists in particular, are not happy with this. Nikema Levy-Armstrong, who's really one of the leaders here in the racial justice movement, said it's a start, but it is not enough. She would like to see Officer Potter, former Officer Potter, charged with a more serious crime of murder, as you said. This is a charge of second-degree manslaughter.
And we'll get into the legal aspects of that a little bit later, as well as the Derek Chauvin murder trial. First of all, what's happening with the unrest in Brooklyn Center that we've had on multiple nights now? In what way is the city government there responding to this?
Well, they have deployed police and the National Guard outside the police station. I was there yesterday for a protest, which later turned into a very tense situation for another night with tear gas and people lobbing objects at police and National Guard soldiers who were guarding the building. The city itself is a small suburb, about 30,000 people, a very diverse community, one of the most diverse in Minnesota, very diverse by Minnesota standards. And the city council there on Monday recommended that the officer and police chief be fired. They since resigned yesterday, and now today we have these criminal charges brought by a neighboring county attorney, not a neighboring county attorney, but another county attorney in the Twin Cities Metro, Pete Orpett of Washington County, to avoid any appearance of conflict of interest.
And of course, this all is occurring simultaneously with the lengthy murder trial in the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis. And just your thoughts on sort of how each is reverberating off of the other.
Well, the killing of Dante Wright is a tragedy in and of itself, certainly, but it couldn't have come at a worst possible time. Tensions here in Minneapolis in particular are very high. Security has been tight since the beginning of jury selection in this trial when they put up barbed wire and concrete barricades around the Hennepin County Courthouse and got National Guard and police at the ready for a big response if warranted. It was not long ago, less than a year ago, that George Floyd was killed, and we saw 3 days of unrest, rioting, looting, and burning in Minneapolis, and officials here are keen to avoid a repeat of that, and you can certainly feel the tension in the air, a lot of concern, particularly among the Twin Cities African-American community here, that Mr. Chauvin will not be convicted on those charges of murder and manslaughter that he's facing.
Thank you so much, Matt. I appreciate your being with us and giving us a sense of what the feeling is right now in the Twin Cities. We appreciate it very much.
Well, you're very welcome.
Matt Sepik reporting for Minnesota Public Radio News, our sister organization, as he gives us the very latest on what's going on. We're going to take a look at both of the cases now that we actually have a criminal charge filed against the officer in Brooklyn Center, Kim Potter, who resigned yesterday after shooting and killing Dante Wright in that incident of just a few days ago. Joining us is Daniel Herbert, who is a Chicago-based defense attorney, former police officer, former prosecutor as well. Mr. Herbert, thank you very much for coming back and joining us on Air Talk. I do want to begin with what is the freshest here, and that is this second-degree manslaughter charge against the former Brooklyn Center officer. How does that charge relate to the shooting here in which the officer claims she accidentally shot Mr. Wright?
Well, thanks for having me, Larry. The elements of second-degree manslaughter certainly fit the facts that we've heard so far with respect to the to what happened and the death and the apparent accident. So I take no issue with the charge being filed. However, I did take a little issue with the process in filing these charges. I mean, they're clearly being based on politics as opposed to, based upon a fair process, reviewing the case. And I don't know how they impaneled a grand jury as quickly as they did, if they even did.
So you think it's a rush to this, even though you think it's probably the best result?
Yeah, I think that, that there's somebody has tragically died. And, they have to be held accountable. But certainly this is not a murder case, based upon the facts that I know so far.
So for a murder case, what would you have to prove in the case of the officer here that would warrant that in your view?
Well, in short, it would be intent. It would be either intent to kill this individual or intent such as a second-degree murder charge with Derek Chauvin to commit some type of a felony, and a death result as a result of that intent. Here, it shows that the intent of this officer was to tase this individual, which normally would not equate to death or great bodily harm.
Earlier today, Benjamin Crump, the attorney who has represented so many families in these cases of officer killings of African Americans, said that this is an example of unconscious bias that comes into policing. Is that something that is prosecutable criminally? And how would you go about showing that an officer has a bias that led her or him to react in a way they wouldn't with someone of another race or ethnicity?
Well, my first thought would be they're going to be going through her social media pretty extensively. Then they should be talking to other police officers, checking other complaints, things like that. It's pretty hard to prove that there was a bias for a particular police officer. And as a matter of fact, there is a scientifically proven study which actually shows the opposite, and that is that white officers tend to pause longer when they shoot black suspects as opposed to white suspects or as opposed to black officers or Latino officers.
Do you know where that study can be found and who conducted that?
Yeah, it was published through the Forest Science Institute, but it was conducted by, I believe it was the University of Oregon. I could certainly send over a link to it.
Yeah, okay, that would be great. And it was peer-reviewed, to your knowledge?
Yes.
Okay. All right, we're talking with Daniel Herbert, Chicago-based defense attorney, also a former prosecutor and former police officer, joining us as well from Loyola Law School in Los Angeles, professor of criminal law and procedure. He was an L.A. County public defender for 8 years, Stanley Goldman. Professor, it's good to have you back with us. Your thoughts about the filing against Officer Potter of the second-degree manslaughter charge?
Well, based on the video that we were shown, and perhaps the appropriate or inappropriate comments by the now former police chief, it would seem like the appropriate charge. The fact it was an accident doesn't make it no longer a crime. There are lots of accidents that become crimes because of the degree of unreasonableness. And here you've got an officer who does something that just seems outlandish, what kind of pressure, what was going through her head at the time, and that is pulls a gun instead of a taser when she thinks it's a taser. They're very different. The video would seem, in my opinion, to confirm that's what she thought, but it was completely outlandish and unreasonable for especially an officer who'd been a training officer, meaning she was training others. She'd been an officer for 26 years to make that kind of mistake unless, she must have been completely befuddled at the time, feeling under tremendous pressure to have made that mistake. It doesn't eliminate the criminality. It becomes a kind of criminal negligence. But the degree to which one could argue that that is a murder is got a bit of a gap there. And although it could be, the basic evidence, as in the Chauvin case, seems to lead us to one conclusion. And we'll have to wait for the evidence to obviously come out at a trial or any other proceeding, and maybe there'll be an early deal in this case for fear that the prosecution will try to add a count of murder in the third degree, as they did against Officer Chauvin, now presently being tried, and perhaps given her, would have to believe, no prior record, the sentence would not be the most severe if she worked out a deal with the government. So that is yet to come. We're still pretty early in this case.
Daniel Herbert, as a former police officer, my understanding is that the taser is typically carried on the opposite side than the handgun. And that there's a very different feel. What are your thoughts on potentially how someone could make a mistake? As I recall, back in the shooting in Oakland at the Fruitvale BART station, the transit officer there also claimed that he shot and killed the man in that highly publicized encounter, thinking that it was his taser when it was his gun.
It's certainly negligence on the part of the officer. The use of force and being involved in a rapidly evolving, tense situation, it has an impact on everyone's body, not just police officers, the physical stress and the human dynamics. But some people, in particular, some police officers, handle that stress and physical dynamic better. And, they don't make these types of mistakes. Yes, there is a big difference. When I was a police officer, we did not have tasers, but I had certainly, fired tasers and held them. And there is a distinct difference. And the biggest part for me is the positioning of the taser relative to the gun, because it's very natural for a police officer to when they feel in fear of death or great bodily harm, you don't think about going to your gun. You just naturally do it. In this case, it appears that she did it while intending to grab her taser. So it's, I doubt highly that there was any ill will or malice on her part, but it clearly was a horribly tragic mistake.
And my memory in the Fruitvale Station shooting in Oakland, that the transit officer who shot and killed Oscar Grant was convicted in that case. despite the claim that it was an accidental shooting. We're talking with criminal defense attorney in Chicago, Daniel Herbert, former police officer, former prosecutor, and Stanley Goldman, Loyola Law professor. Professor, let's turn our attention to the murder trial of former Minneapolis officer Derek Chauvin. There were 2 weeks of a very compelling prosecution testimony in that case. Then we had this morning a defense witness who was called to the stand who made assertions that George Floyd was succumbed as a result to pre-existing health conditions and heart problems. Once the jury has had 2 weeks of this very compelling testimony, much of it from former colleagues, people who'd worked with Derek Chauvin, how big a challenge is this for the defense to overcome?
Excellent 2 weeks for the prosecution. There's no question about it. I suppose one might worry that if one were particularly susceptible to concern, that they put on so much of a case that the jury might actually become a little numb to it and sort of be looking for any possible other explanation. And they were provided it today. Mr. Wheeler, Dr. Wheeler, I think it's Fowler.
Dr. Fowler, yeah.
Yeah, that testified today, emphatically, if you will, but with some modifications about the cause of death was not the officers, but pre-existing conditions and the fact that Floyd had apparently just taken a pill, at least that was the testimony today, as he was being arrested, and therefore it was taking effect while he was on the ground. I mean, there are two basic arguments here by the defense. If you think about it, you break it down. One is, I had the right to do what I was doing, says Officer Chauvin. I had the right to be holding him down because he was not submitting sufficiently, which someone testified yesterday was an appropriate thing to do, contrary to evidence heard from prosecution witnesses. And secondly, even if I wasn't properly holding him down, even if it was improper, even if I shouldn't have done this to him, it didn't cause his death. He died from completely different causes. And the fact that he didn't die a year ago when he was being when officers were trying to restrain him and he also had taken drugs doesn't necessarily mean that a year hasn't passed and he might not have grown older or more susceptible or the conditions are different. These are tough sells for the jury, but you've got to understand, if someone is looking for an explanation, they found one today. It's more or less like the O.J. trial and the infamous bloody glove when O.J. Simpson tried it on and it didn't fit. I mean, it gave any juror who was looking for a reason to acquit a hook to hang a not guilty verdict on. And what we don't know about the jury is there any one or two or any number of people on the jury who might be looking for a reason to acquit? And if they can't find one, they would convict. But if they can find one, they're susceptible of voting contrary to the videotape and contrary to the prosecution evidence. So it's all still up in the air until you hear the verdict. And once again, today, the defense presented a hook, whether you choose to believe it or not. Maybe I don't find it as credible as others might as I was listening to the testimony, but it's possible some jurors could.
We have Julie in the Valley writes on the AirTalk page, and this goes back to the other incident that we've been talking about, shooting by former Officer Kim Potter of Dante Wright, wondering why Officer Potter's stress level was so high during a routine traffic stop. There was no reason to believe the young man posed any kind of danger to the officers. There were a couple warrants that were out on him. He did get back in the car when they were trying to take him into custody, but that doesn't necessarily explain why there would be a perception of threat. Daniel Herbert, can you speak to that?
Obviously, we would need to speak with the officer to get the full explanation there. But I've seen conflicting reports about whether or not there was knowledge about the outstanding warrants. And one was for, I believe, an aggravated robbery. One was for an aggravated assault. Certainly, had the officer that fired known that, you know, that does increase the threat level, because when you have somebody that has outstanding warrants for very serious crimes, your fear as a police officer is that, and I've witnessed it firsthand on numerous occasions, is that you might get an individual that is willing to do anything not to go back to the penitentiary. I don't think her actions were reasonable, even assuming that she knew all of that. And it, you know, it really comes down to how comfortable one person is with struggle. You know, if you're an officer that has, been in some confrontations, whether before you were a police officer or when you were one, you're less likely to overreact in some of those situations. And I think it's interesting to note, unfortunately, I think that these types of incidents may increase because, you know, there's been a concerted effort, and maybe it's a good idea, but it does cut both ways, a concerted effort to hire police officers that, have never been in some type of confrontation. And, while there might be a benefit to lessening the 1983 civil lawsuits that are very costly, it could increase situations such as what we saw with the tragic incident with Mr. Wright.
And also, we just want to stress that we do not know what those warrants contained. We don't know what the officer knew about it. We don't know what her state of mind is. All of this that will presumably come out in a criminal trial, in case you just joined us. That former officer who resigned yesterday in Brooklyn Center outside Minneapolis, Kim Potter, has been charged with second-degree manslaughter for shooting and killing Dante Wright, 20-year-old man who was killed after being stopped for expired tags on his vehicle. I want to thank our guest, Daniel Herbert, and Professor Stanley Goldman for joining us on Air Talk. Coming up, we'll talk about the state of California considering establishing a bank, a retail bank that would be available for residents who either are not able to get to bank branches or ATMs because of transportation challenges, or not able to pay fees that banks typically charge. The state would be able to provide that service free of charge. We'll hear the pros and cons of the concept in 1 minute on Air Talk.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.